Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly.
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to joking and talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio, and I hope you don't mind I started the safety briefing early because I'm tired. There's a nice sativa. It'll keep me up a bit. So there's a question going on in our chat room I wanted to get to. Before I do, a quick mention that we'll be playing more clips from Midnight in the Desert with Heather Wade, and I'm going to be on that show more often, apparently. She seemed to really enjoy our conversations. And what was fun about it from my perspective, because, you know, I get to talk about this 2 hours a day every day for the past 10 years. But what was fun from my perspective is getting outside of the echo chamber where I get to kind of stretch my primer chops, I guess we could call it. You know, the people out there that don't, like, you guys listen to me right now, you know the whole Schedule One deal. You know how insane Schedule One is. Some of you are using this medically, right? And you know that, hey, there's accepted medical use in the United States. But when you're talking to that outside audience, people that don't smoke pot, people don't know, to them, it's so fun for me to watch their eyes get opened, to listen to them as they're like, what? Really? Hold on. Huh? Right? Though, when I get those responses of like, well, wait a minute, wait. There's the federal government sending marijuana to two medical marijuana patients, and yet the federal government says there's no medical use to marijuana? Yep. And they're like, huh? And their minds just get blown. And I loved every time Heather had some variant on the saying of, you know, the deeper you go down this rabbit hole, the weirder it gets, the crazier it gets. It's like, yeah. Yeah. And that's really a testament to the genius of Harry J. Anslinger and the people that wrote the Controlled Substances Act and the people that put together the treaties, is that they are a nest. They're just a whole tangle, like a root ball almost, of reefer madness and racism and over incarceration and corporate ties and medical values and all these things that are all tied together, and it's not. And any one part of it seems so incredibly absurd that on its face, you'd think anyone that sees that would automatically, you know, the whole thing would fall apart. But it's so tightly wrapped up around all these other decisions and precedents and laws and treaties that, no, that absurdity isn't legally absurd. Like the thing about, you know, there's no medically accepted use in the United States. Well, what about Colorado has medical? California has medical. Oregon has medical. They're in the United States. Yes, they are. But they are not the United States. Right? They're a political subdivision of the United States, and their opinion on things is not the opinion of the United States, legally speaking. That's our federalism, right? We have a federal government that speaks for the United States, and it says there's no medically accepted use because it looked out over its laws and saw that its laws said that marijuana was a Schedule One substance that can't be used by anybody. So if nobody can legally use it, then there is no accepted legal use, no accepted medical use. You got it? Because we said nobody could ever use it. Anybody that's using it isn't using it legitimately, which means there is no legitimate use, which is how we back up saying no one can use it. You see the circle? It supports itself. It's a tautology, man. It's a Mobius strip of never ending justification. It's illegal because I said so. You can't have it because it's illegal. It's illegal because I said so. You can't have it because it's illegal. It's just a circle. And everything you start to learn about this gets you deeper and deeper into that craziness. And it's so, so exciting when I get to go on to some mainstream show and reveal these things to people. The other thing that's really powerful in these appearances I get to do is telling the stories of patients. And that was the other thing. People in the chat room have been asking me, hey, was there anybody called in and was really anti-pot? No, not one. Not one anti-pot call. None. There was one guy through text, apparently, who said something about, you guys are promoting marijuana, but you ought to see what it's like in a prison. Like, well, yeah, that I'm trying to keep the marijuana people out of the prison. That's the whole point, man. The prison is a bad place. It's a place where marijuana people ought not be. See, people like that are conflating the effects of prohibition and the culture of prohibition with marijuana itself and most of the people that use it. I'm not going to be in a Pollyanna and tell you there ain't no Mexican mafia and there ain't no gang and there ain't no bloodshed that happens over the illegal marijuana trade. Hell, there's a story in the Medford Mail Tribune right now, right here in beautiful legal Oregon, where one of our major licensed commercial marijuana growers, a guy named James Bowman, had a home invasion type robbery, basically. Had seven guys in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle masks put a pillowcase over his head, tie him up, burn him with butane blow torches, stick a drill into his hip, beat him repeatedly, thinking he was some big marijuana money kingpin when the guy's just struggling to get by. Steal 300 pounds of his marijuana, take all of his video surveillance equipment, put it in a tub and ruin all of it so there's no evidence. Now, they do have leads on about six out of seven of these people that attacked him. But even here in legal Oregon, that violence still exists. It's not because we're legal. It's because prohibition still exists elsewhere. And it's still profitable enough to beat, tie, almost kill a man over dried plant material that ought to cost, you know, $10 an ounce.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
Did you know that in the U.S., black women have the highest HIV infection rates of all women? As a public health professional, I know we can do better. Every day, I work to close the gap in health inequities, but I'm just one person. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're not high. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's not recreational. It can be destructive, and it consistently is destructive.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the voice of the industry from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pot 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. Just about 10 after the hour, and I want to get to this question from the chat room because it's one that I haven't researched in the past. And it's one I ought to. And during the break, I was doing some quick Googling just to see if anybody else had come up with this list. I know it's got to be out there somewhere. I'll check up with my peeps out at Normal, see if they've got anything on this. But the basic question is it illegal to try to cheat a drug test? And the answer is, I don't know. It depends on your state, right? I believe this is a state law thing. I don't think there's a, well, you know, let me take this back. I think at the federal level, and we start talking about Department of Transportation required drug testing, mandated by the 1988 Drug-Free Workplace Act, I think there's a mechanism in there for which they get punished if they're caught cheating drug tests at the federal level. I can't vouch for that for sure, though. But something's telling me in the back of my head that I think there's a penalty built in there. I'll check that out at the federal level. At the state level, I couldn't find a list of any states, but I did find a couple where it is illegal. In the state of Illinois, Public Act 093-0691, it is against the law in Illinois to possess, manufacture, or sell substances that help people cheat on drug tests. This includes synthetic urine, adulterants, or devices intended to help smuggle these people in, aka the hollow fake cock. And it's also illegal to substitute or adulterate your specimen. For the purposes of this section, drug or alcohol screening tests includes urine testing, hair follicle testing, perspiration testing, saliva testing, blood testing, fingernail testing, and eye drug testing. What? Eye drug? They're testing your eyes now. A violation of this section is a class 4 felony. A class 4 felony for which the court shall impose a minimum fine of $1,000. Minimum $1,000 for cheating a drug test in the state of Illinois if you're caught. But worse is the felony part. We're talking about losing your right to vote, losing your right to possess a firearm, losing your right to a passport to be able to travel internationally because you tried to smuggle in some synthetic pee and a fake cock to get a job. You know, felony. That's amazing to me. I found another story in Indiana. This one came off of your USA Today, a story from 2013 about fake urine. And in this story, the mention was, let me find it. Indiana has two laws related to the issue, both of which passed in July 2005 without much fanfare and having to do with, you know, trying to cheat or get around drug testing. Offenders may not realize is that simply possessing synthetic urine and attempting to fool screening tests are crimes in Indiana. So one law against possessing synthetic urine, the other crime trying to cheat a drug test. And I believe you're in the state of Oregon. I think we have a law against that in the state of Oregon as well. But again, I don't have the research on this. So thank you for the great question. It's something I want to research. Now I want to make a list. I definitely want to make a list now of all these, which states where it's actually a crime to cheat drug tests. Now, I just, you know, drug testing to me is the most disgusting thing, one of the most disgusting aspects of this war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. Imagine just the indignity and the disgusting, you know, dirty, infected waste. And we're talking about giving one of your body's waste products for evaluation to determine your fitness for employment. George Carlin once had a line. I think it was George Carlin who had the line that said, if it was shit in a bag, do you think people would be as accepting as drug tests? And you know what? I say, yeah, I think they would. I'm never underestimate what people are willing to put up with. I've flown commercial airlines. Okay. So I think people would do it.
Well, you know, it's stupid, but they give you the little bag and the gloves and, you know, you got to get a job. You know, yeah.
I can imagine that. I can easily imagine that happening. It's one of those things where it's the old frog in the boiling pot of water deal. You know, if you turn the water heat up slowly, it doesn't recognize it's dying and ends up boiling to death. We did that with our civil liberties and our privacy, dating back to, hell, the 50s, if you really want to look at it. The minute anyone suggested that we ought to give our pee to get a job was all built on a moral panic around a railway crash in 1986, I think it was, or maybe it was 87. Anyway, bad laws coming from moral panics is pretty much par for the course here in America. I wanted to take some time again before we get to our 20 after break to talk a little bit more with Heather Wade from Midnight in the Desert. We got some more clips here where she basically started throwing, you know, nice lobbed softballs over the plate about some common misconceptions, some common complaints about marijuana legalization, marijuana, and the people who consume it, which was also good practice in the sense of being able to frame and quickly answer in soundbite form some of these common misconceptions. Two of those patients are still getting 8 to 9 ounces of marijuana every month. One is a woman named Elvie Musica. She's a friend of mine, lives here in Oregon, a woman who's battling glaucoma, who still can see after 23, 25 years, however long she's been using it. They gave her 2 years of sight left. She can still see because of cannabis. And the other is a stockbroker named Irvin Rosenfeld, who lives in Florida. I forget exactly where in Florida, but he has a congenital bone tumor kind of disorder, causes excruciating pain, smokes every day, all day. He can actually smoke on the steps of the U.S. Capitol. Nobody can arrest him because he's got that federal permit. But that's it. Those two people. And then the clincher is even their use doesn't count as medical use recognized in the United States for purposes of overturning Schedule One.
Wait a minute. What?
I know. It's mind-blowing. The federal government is sending medical marijuana to two people and has been for over 3 decades, but that does not constitute accepted medical use in the United States for overturning Schedule One.
Oh, my God.
It's maddening, isn't it?
It is, because you know what, Russ? I guess, you know, here I am, my naivete showing again, because I'm coming at this with logic. You know, that's how I come at
it. Uh-oh. No, that's never going to work in the drug war. I'm sorry.
If marijuana is legal, what am I going to do when my little kid gets a hold of some marijuana gummy bears and passes out and dies?
What do you do with your X-Lax chocolates? So like a bar of X-Lax chocolates looks like a chocolate bar to a little kid. You don't leave it laying out. You put the X-Lax chocolates, you wrap them up, you keep in the medicine cabinet, you tell the kid to stay out of it. That's the same attitude we need to have toward edibles.
But I don't remember any hysteria about X-Lax chocolates ever in the history of X-Lax chocolates.
And there's another consideration too. When we get these scare stories about there's more, all these kids go into the ER or these reports to the poison control centers, all we can truly say is it's an increase in the reporting. We can't really say that it's an increase in the incidents, because under prohibition, there's a strong incentive to lie about why your kid got sick when you take him to the ER. I'm thinking that as the marijuana calls went up, I'm sure the calls for maybe it was food poisoning probably went down.
That's a good point, actually. Somehow, some way with marijuana, it's all right because, well, it's kind of a, you know, a thing for low life people and slackers anyway, right? So
that's a very good point, because there's in our society and the way that we perceive drugs, we put alcohol in a whole different class. You have to actually tell people alcohol is a drug before they'll begrudgingly admit, oh, yeah, I suppose it is. But we have it so ingrained that we have an entirely different vocabulary. You're not an addict. You're an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a user. You're a drinker. You're not high. You're buzzed. You're not overdosed. You're hungover. Mm-hmm. Right. We have a whole different language that we use, and that frames, that shapes our thinking about alcohol, that we don't even think of it as a drug. But what if I propose that in every city in America, we set up a special building where pot smokers can go to this building, drive their cars there, park their cars, go into the building with the express purpose of getting high, and then we'll trust them after they've gotten high to judge themselves as to whether or not they're too impaired to get back in their car and drive home.
Well, most people would say, you're a lunatic, you're crazy. A place, a building to take drugs, and you're just going to trust people?
Yeah, baby.
All right, that sound means it is 20 after 420 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. And when we come back, just for the hell of it, I'm going to talk about the Green Party. Because, you know...
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Hey, did you all watch the Super Bowl last February? You see the NFL's championship game, the Super Bowl? The New England Patriots were playing against the Atlanta Falcons. And it was the championship, right? Whoever wins that game, the Falcons or the Patriots would hoist the Lombardi Trophy and be declared the champions of football. I don't know if you were rooting for the New England Patriots or if you were rooting for the Atlanta Falcons. Me, I was rooting for the Harlem Globetrotters to win the Super Bowl. Yeah, see, here's the problem, right? The New England Patriots, they don't do any slam dunking. They don't do any behind-the-back passes. They don't do any fun skits with the crowd. And neither do the Atlanta Falcons, for that matter. They don't dribble the ball behind their back. They don't do the fake passes, and they don't do any slam dunks either. But the Harlem Globetrotters, oh my God, they're the best, man. The Harlem Globetrotters can slam dunk. They can dribble behind their back. They can do no-look passes. They do skits with the crowd. That's why I put all my energy and all my thought and all my money into supporting the Harlem Globetrotters to win the Super Bowl. Yeah, because the Harlem Globetrotters give me what I want. I want high-flying dunks, and I want to see, you know, behind-the-back passes and fun basketball stunts. And so that's who I'm picking to win the Super Bowl. Now, if you're sitting back listening to this going, what in the f*** is he talking about? It's what goes through my mind whenever I hear someone coming around talking to me about the Green Party. Or for that matter, the Libertarian Party. But today I'll stick with the Green Party. It's basically the same argument. You can tell me how great the Green Party is. Oh my God. The Green Party wants to do this and that. They want single payer. They want $15 minimum wage. They want environmental regulations. They want to end corporate duopolies. They want to end wars. They want to save the animals. Whatever the hell else you want to throw on there. They want to give me blowjobs on my birthday and a free pound every week. Whatever it might be, don't mean diddly shit because they ain't gonna win. You can tell me all you want about them until you can point to a governor in any state who's a Green Party governor. Hell, show me a mayor in any major American city who's a Green Party mayor. Show me a town board of selectmen that has a Green majority. And then we can start talking about what great things might become of voting for Green Party people. Hell, at least the Libertarians can point to a few people they've got elected somewhere. It's just insane to me to keep bringing this up. And I know the arguments. Oh, the Democrats are bought out and they cheated Bernie Sanders and they're corrupt and they're owned by Wall Street and all the money that's bought into them and they're just as bad as the Republicans. They're not. That is the biggest, most toxic line of bullshit in politics today. They are not just like the Republicans. But here's the fact. There's this thing called, because my chat room person refuses to do the research, there's this thing called Duverger's Law. It was come up by this French political scientist in the 1700s and has since been refined and observed throughout numerous operational democracies throughout the entire world. India, Britain, parliaments, France, all these places that have democracies of various styles of democracies. And what Duverger's Law basically says is that in any single district winner-take-all type of electoral system, you will always end up with a duopoly. The more parliamentarian your system is, the more representational government type of style that you have, the more likely you're going to have third and fourth parties. And we see this across the world. We see this in Britain where there's the Tories and there's Labour, but there's also UKIP and there's also, I can't remember some of the other party names off the top of my head. Excuse me. We got the same thing in Canada. They've got two pretty major parties, but then also smaller parties that get some representation. You don't see that in America because we have the first past the post winner take all single representative district system. And this will always create a duopoly. It's not because the corporate this and that want it to happen and they're forcing this and there's some Illuminati conspiracy behind it. It's because of math. It's because of simple game theory. If it's a winner-take-all system, there will be two parties. Now, today, they're Democrats and Republicans. Yesterday, they were Whigs and Federalists. In the future, they may be Yangs and Combs. But there'll always be two, so long as the rules of the game are the Super Bowl. As long as the rules of the game are two-party set. I mean, this is the rules of the game are set up in such a way, the math works in such a way that it is fruitless and hopeless to try to nurture a third party against these two duopoly parties. The only way this has ever changed is through the infiltration of one of the existing two parties. And this is what Bernie Sanders knew. This is what kills me about the Greens who come knocking on my door trying to convince me is Bernie Sanders knew this truth. He tried to take over the Democratic Party from within. He wasn't successful, but he came closer than anyone has so far. And that's the only way you can win. You've got to be one of the two parties. Trump understood this, didn't try to run as an independent, ran and took over the Republican Party within, aided, of course, a lot by Russia, aided a lot by RT, the Russian state television, on which Jill Stein was very fond of appearing. And wasn't she at a dinner with Putin at some point throughout the early points of the election? Right. See, we know what's going on here as far as that stuff goes, trying to divide the left against itself by creating fake Bernie bot trolls and all that stuff. That's been revealed. But to get back to the subject, Duverger's Law is what's stopping the Green Party. Duverger's Law is what's stopping the Libertarian Party. If you want to have more parties, you don't try to win the game under the current rules. The most important thing to do would be to change the rules. Change how the game is played. And there's already a very strong effort to do that. It's called fairvote.org. Check it out, fairvote.org. change.org. And it has to do with range voting, instant runoff voting, mail-in voting. Change the way the game is played. Right now, the way the game is played is so laden with money and so dependent on winner takes all that there have to be two behemoth, masterful money-making parties in order for them, for anybody to have a chance at winning in these elections. But it can be changed. The state of Maine has already done it. Now, there's currently a constitutional question as to whether or not they can, but in the last election, the state of Maine passed an initiative that went for ranked choice voting. Ranked choice voting is when you can pick more than one of the people on the ballot as who you think would be good at the job. In other words, it changes the math. See, the math right now suffers from the spoiler effect. The spoiler effect is what we had in the Bush-Gore Nader election, and we had in the Trump-Clinton-Johnson-Stein election, and we had in the Clinton-Bob Dole and Ross Perot election. Or was that Bush and Perot? Yeah, Bush and Perot, yes. But it's the spoiler effect. It's the situation where, well, I really like Jill Stein, but if I vote for Jill Stein, she's not going to get enough votes. And so then somebody else is going to win, and it might be Trump, and I hate him worse. Now, for a lot of those people, it was they didn't care. They thought Clinton and Trump were the same, so they didn't care which one of them win. I hope those people have gotten a slap in the face from reality and recognize that, no matter how bad you thought Hillary Clinton was, she is not as bad as Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a disaster for this country, internationally, domestically, in every way, shape, and form. Disaster. But anyway, if you want to win at this and you want to get some third party representation, we have to change the rules of the game. And so this ranked choice voting, the way it works is you get to pick more than one. In the election when it was Gore, Bush, Nader, if you wanted Ralph Nader, you had to think, well, am I in a swing state? If I am in a swing state and I vote for Nader, and then there's not enough votes for Gore to beat Bush, then I get Bush, and Bush is farther away from what Nader wants than what Gore wants, so I don't want to spoil my vote, so maybe I'll, you know, you have to make those calculations. But in a ranked choice voting system, the way that it works is you get to pick, I want person one, person two, and you rank them in order. You can say, you know what, I think Ralph Nader's the best guy for the job. He's my number one choice. But if I can't have Ralph Nader, Al Gore is my number two choice. And what happens in these ranked choice voting is you collect all the votes for everyone, and you collect all the, first you count the first place votes. Who voted for this person as their number one choice? And if a number one choice has 50% or more of the vote, well, that person's the winner. Like a majority of the people picked that person as their first choice. That was the best choice for everyone. But what often happens in that is you look at the first choices and nobody gets a majority. They get a plurality. Like one guy's got 40, one guy's got 30, another guy's got 30%, whatever it might be. And in that situation, you drop the loser. So let's say in the election of 2000 that Al Gore ended up getting the most votes, and for first place votes, it was Gore, Bush, and Nader. Well, okay, but Gore didn't get an outright majority, so we drop Ralph Nader. Now, collect all the second place votes for all the people that voted for Nader, who voted for him first place, who was their second choice. And those votes get added to Bush or Gore. Well, since those Nader people would have more likely picked Gore as their second choice, he'd have gotten a whole lot more of the second place votes and then won that state. There wouldn't have been a spoiler effect. You could vote third party, vote your conscience, and not worry that doing so was costing a vote for the lesser evil. I know how people get frustrated about this because they hate this idea, I have to vote for the lesser evil. And it's a selfish mode of thinking. I don't like having to make tough moral choices. I have to vote for somebody who has a certain set of policies I don't like. How come I don't get to vote for someone who perfectly matches what I want? Well, sorry, Snowflake, that's not the way the world works. Politics is some sausage making, and you have to make choices you don't like. And you have to pick people based on a lot of complex factors and calculations of, all right, given that one of these two people will win, and let's not kid ourselves, we know one of the two major party candidates will win. Given that truth, which one of the two is less shitty? Which one of the two might be marginally better than the other? And just statistically speaking, it's damn near impossible they are equally shitty. Given that there's so many issues, issues A through Z on that side and A through Z on that side, and if you scored each one of them on a scale of 1 to 10 of how close you were, the chances that the sum of A through Z on that side and the sum of A through Z on that side would be exactly equal are pretty remote. So let's stop playing games and pretending like we get a perfect candidate that we want to vote for. Quit abdicating our responsibility to make tough decisions that are for the best of the country, the good of the country. How many people may lose their health care, and die because some people were, oh, doggone it, I don't like Hillary Clinton. She's so mean. She's a terrible person that likes warfare. And she bombed, did this terrible thing and that terrible thing, and I hate her. But you know what? Hillary Clinton wouldn't have been repealing and replacing Obamacare. Hillary Clinton wouldn't have been fighting to get more people kicked off health insurance to give a huge tax break to the wealthy. Anyway, that's as much as I want to talk about this politics, because I saw it in the chat room and I couldn't leave that stone unturned. Let's go back to Heather Wade with Midnight in the Desert and talk about weed. Or just a little bit.
Hey, Russ. I was just calling to say I am a survivor of the opioid and Xanax epidemic. And talking about productivity, after 12 spine surgeries, I'm now up, re-entered the workforce, and, you know, writing and exercising and lost 30 pounds. So cannabis is doing pretty well for me.
Wow, that's such a great point that gets made, that we're so willing to accept. You know, the people that make this argument about productivity with marijuana are willing to accept people being out of the workplace or working shortened hours for their opiate prescription that they have. Well, a doctor said it's okay, so I guess we'll let this guy have work half days or whatever. I'm glad that cannabis has worked for you and has given you a lot of miraculous benefit.
But in not every case can you legislate morality, Russ.
In the law, they have two categories of law. They call them malum prohibitum and malum in se. And it's Latin. Malum prohibitum means something's illegal because we say it's illegal and it's just against the rules. Whereas malum in se is things that are illegal because they are morally, they're just inherently wrong. Murder, rape, arson, theft. Inherently wrong. We don't need to make a rule or a regulation. We all, as moral people, recognize that. But things like marijuana being illegal is not inherently wrong. It's something that's malum prohibitum. It's something that we've decided should be against the rules. But if we're going to have rules to decide whether things are right or wrong, let's have some consistency, logic, and science behind them. If we've decided as a society we're willing to accept the risks, the known risks, of alcohol and tobacco being legal, then by those standards, there's no logical basis to prohibit something far safer than those substances. It makes no sense whatsoever. The marijuana agenda for me is just to be treated like a beer drinker, treated like a cigar smoker. I want a place to use my substance with my friends, like a bar. I want to be able to go to an outdoor park or a festival where there's a marijuana garden, a fenced off area where we're allowed to smoke. I want to be able to go to a store where I can purchase some. These aren't things that are asking too much, I think, because alcohol drinkers and tobacco smokers have all that. We just want equal rights.
So why am I not hearing stories about people and their lives being ruined?
They are out there, and you'll hear them made mostly by people who used marijuana and then moved on to something else. And then their life became difficult to manage because of an addiction to meth or heroin or whatever else it might have been. So it tells you something about marijuana that most of the people that demonize it have to bring in another drug to be able to demonize it. The marijuana itself doesn't seem to be so much the problem. But this is not to say that there aren't people out there that do develop an unhealthy relationship with marijuana.
There are people that develop an unhealthy relationship with the internet, with food, with gambling, with porn, with sex, with all manner of things. So let's not make light of... Yeah, there we go. So we don't make light of the fact that this could be a bad thing for some people. Some states, they dictate that, yeah, you can get medical cannabis, but only if you're a terminal condition or it's intractable. And intractable means you've exhausted all possible remedies. Well, why should we force someone to go through this pharmaceutical regimen with all of the side effects, to go through these surgeries? I've dealt with people that have been prescribed brain surgeries before they went and tried cannabis. How about we make the non-toxic herb the first resort? And if that doesn't work, we start resorting to cutting people's heads open and stuffing them full of chemicals.
Gosh, you know, that sounds so logical to me.
That logic won't get you far in the drug war, Heather.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I've got to tell you this story about a sting that the Denver Police Department has undertaken, because, you know, they solved all of their crime. There was just nothing left for them to do but to go after people smoking pot in a legal state. Okay.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Did you know that each day in the state of Georgia, more than 6 people are diagnosed with HIV? As a person providing life-saving services to those most at risk, I know HIV is preventable. We need more people in this fight, which is why I want you to join me this October in Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barak has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. 43 and a half after the hour, and we have some bonus drug war data mining. I kept the data mining segment short in the first hour because we were just doing that quick little quip about Trump and the border wall. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, it's funny already just because, like, most of the drugs that come across the border from Mexico aren't crossing land routes. People are flying in with them. They're being trucked in right through, you know, NAFTA approved gateways in tractor trailers, right? So, you know, Representative Steve King's vision of the Mexican immigrant with the calves the size of cantaloupes toting 75-pound bags across the Nogales Desert. Come on now. not really happening to any legitimate extent. But it was a funny story. You know, the wall's got to be transparent so you can see the bags of weed being flung over the border. Sure. But let's get to some real data. The first one comes from Normal. We mentioned it briefly in our news, I believe, yesterday about the study coming out of Binghamton University in New York and the University of Iowa, where they reviewed the TEDS-A youth marijuana treatment data
from 95 through 2012. And what they found is that over half of the people in drug treatment for marijuana are put there by the criminal justice system. This is something we've mentioned in the past, but that percentage is increasing. As legalization is happening, the problem's getting worse. They found youth admissions for cannabis rose 65% from 95 through 2012. 65% increase from around 53,000 admissions in 95 to around 87,500 in 2012. The biggest increase was among Latinos, a 256% increase. African-American youth, an 86% increase. Criminal justice system referrals rose 70% during that time period and account for 54% of all substance abuse admissions by young people. Among those in treatment, half of them exhibited little evidence of suffering from marijuana dependence. 30% of young people admitted to marijuana treatment since 2008 had no record of having consumed cannabis in the past 30 days before going to rehab. Another 20% had cannabis use three times or fewer in the month prior to their admission. So fully 50% are not even weekly tokers. Not even weekly. So the severity of drug use, according to the authors, has decreased, while the amount of court-ordered and criminal justice-ordered admissions have increased. And why are they going after all the kids? Is there a problem that needs to be solved? No, what they're finding is youth use of marijuana and prevalence of cannabis use disorder by young people have declined significantly. So it's a racket, folks. This is all about padding the bottom line of big rehab. This is about providing easy customers for drug rehabilitation centers to pad their statistics. Your drug rehab looks great when you can say, oh, 85%, 90% of our clientele don't come back. 90% of our clientele are, you know, cured or have been substance-free for X number of days or whatever stat you want to manufacture. Works a whole lot better when a lot of those people within that stat are marijuana smokers who you threatened with a jail cell if they fail a piss test. Remarkable how easy it is for them to quit this drug that they're so heavily addicted to, they had to be forced into rehab. It just makes no sense other than make work. It's just creating clientele for not only these rehabs, but the drug testing industry. You have to pay for those drug tests you take. They're not supplying them for free. Clientele for, you know, drug courts, creating jobs for court clerks and courts themselves. And they always want to point to the drug court as being, you know, some sort of nice favor they're doing for us. Well, we're not locking you up. We're trying to get people treatment by gum. We want to, treatment's better. We want to cure them. We want to treat them. We want to cure them. Yeah, but some reason you only want to offer the treatment after you're able to bust them, right? The people who haven't been caught, who go to social services asking for treatment, we don't have any beds for them. You know why? Because they're all taken up by the kids who got busted for the weed, who don't need the treatment, who haven't smoked weed in the past month. We actually got that on the show with Heather Wade. We got a caller talking about how, you know, or no, Heather talked about it. Heather talked about a friend or somebody she knew being unable to find a treatment facility bed for their serious problem with heroin. And all those beds are taken up by people doing court ordered stints, a lot of them for marijuana. So that's available on Normal's blog. I'll have that up online at mjagenda.com. Also, we've got some polls coming out. There's a poll coming out of New York on legalizing recreational marijuana use. It's just about evenly divided. 49% for, 47% against. Democrats, of course, strongly for it, 58-39. Republicans strongly opposed, 60-34. Independents are closely divided. Younger voters for it, 68-28. Older voters against it, 46-39. So there you go. New York's a close one right now, but there's another poll,
another question on the poll about ConCon. Now, this is an interesting thing happening in New York. The New York State Constitution has a codicil, a little-known codicil, that requires it to hold a vote every 20 years on whether or not there ought to be a constitutional convention. And this has happened on occasion. But according to this poll, two-thirds of New Yorkers have heard nothing at all about the November vote on the ConCon. And that's pretty much unchanged for the past 2 years. But in previous polls, when they know about it, you know, if they could see it on the ballot, they go 62-22 as far as, yes, we should have such a thing. So this will be interesting to see how New York plays out, because there is a long shot attempt in New York State to advocate for marijuana legalization through this ConCon by, you know, calling for there to be a state constitutional convention and one of its planks to be legalization of marijuana. I don't know. I would work for a ConCon on the plank of creating a state initiative process. Don't muddy the waters of the constitutional convention by bringing marijuana into it necessarily. Bring in, let's create a citizen initiative process for New York. You can get a lot of people for that from a lot of different groups that will be thinking to themselves, hey, then we could pass our ballot measure. Rather than dividing or singling out that, oh, the marijuana people want this, and the so-and-so people want that, and the gun people want that, and the abortion people want that, and all these different groups muddying the waters and giving people something to hate about ConCon. Well, I'd have supported that thing, but then the gay people showed up, or then the abortion people showed up, or whatever it is that someone stereotypically might hate. Not picking favorites here. But you give it more targets to shoot down. But if ConCon were focused on the singular focus of a constitutional convention to create a citizen initiative process, all that same disadvantage from having the disparate groups who want that convention then becomes an advantage of all those people being allied behind the idea of creating the citizen initiative. Then when you have citizen initiative power, you go after passing a marijuana amendment through citizen initiative power, marijuana initiative. And you've got multiple chances to try to do so, rather than the one, all the eggs in one basket, going for it in 2017 and off your election. Instead, it's like when the genie gives you three wishes, use the first wish to ask for more wishes, right? If you get this once in a 20-year chance to create a constitutional convention, use it to get yourself the power in the Constitution to modify the Constitution more often, or to create laws on your own. That's the way I'd go for that New York thing. All right, before I forget, we've got to get to this story about the Denver Police Department, because our friend Steve Burke has created the Denver Church of Cannabis, and they had a 420 ceremony, the Denver International Church of Cannabis. Three of the founders, Steve Burke and two other founders, were cited for public consumption of marijuana and violating the Colorado Clean Indoor Air Act for their 420 rally after several undercover Denver police officers were able to get inside the church event that day. I guess they must have solved all the other crimes in Denver. Inside.
Wow.
Sorry about that. I got something started before I wanted to start. Let's kill that. Sorry. They say they must have solved all the other crimes in Denver to take the time to get two undercover officers into a cannabis church to verify that, oh my God, in it they were actually smoking. Jeez. All right, let's wind things up with my final statements to Heather Wade on the Midnight in the Desert program. I have to stay on the illegitimate side.
Wow. And this is what the drug war is doing for us, right?
And it's just one story, if I could tell, that's just happened this last week that just kind of gives you an idea, because we didn't really get too much into the aspect of child protective services and what, you know, one of the discussions is, what about the children? We want to save the children.
Yes.
Well, if we care about the children, we shouldn't be breaking up their families over marijuana. I had to interview a fellow by the name of Michael Brooks, who's living in Tennessee. He discovers at age 50 that he's been living with hepatitis C for 25 years. Mm. So he only discovers this because his body's starting to fail. Hepatitis C attacks the liver. Your liver doesn't have nerve cells. So you can live with it for years and not know anything's wrong until things are really wrong.
in desperation, after having done all of the pharmaceutical preparations, he goes to Colorado, gets on a heavy dose of cannabis oil. The viral load of Hep C in his blood becomes undetectable. He gets his health back. In fact, he's healthier than he'd ever been, but he has to go back to Tennessee. So he goes back to Tennessee, and he's poor, and he's living in a place that had a problem with lead paint, and his kids end up with lead poisoning. So goes to the state to try to get some help for the kids. They say, hey, to get the help, you got to do a drug test. He takes the drug test, and the results of the drug test are the highest amount of THC they'd ever seen because he'd been using this cannabis oil. Within 24 hours, Child Protective Services is at his door to take his two kids away because medical marijuana saved his life. That was 2 years ago. This man had been seeing his children for 2 hours every 2 weeks on visitation, and to get that visitation had to give up the cannabis oil, of course, because they drug test him. So the Hep C comes back. He's devastated. His viral load is spiked. His body is failing. He's heading toward his deathbed. And 3 months ago, they cut off his two-hour visitations every 2 weeks because the kids were becoming too distraught. His two-year-old and four-year-old were too distraught every time daddy had to go away after their next visit, so they just stopped giving him visitation. It's bad enough the state is going to condemn this man to death by taking away the medical marijuana that saved his life so he could get his kids back. He may die before they actually get to see him on his deathbed. That's what the war on drugs is doing to people. The war on marijuana is shattering families and killing people.
Oh my God. Wow. You know what? The content of what we talk about on this show really does affect me. I mean, I'm a human being. Someone needed a liver transplant, but when marijuana was found in their system, well, now they're not allowed to have a new liver.
That was the one of the stories that broke as I got into this career was the story of Tim Guerin, a musician in Seattle, Washington, who needed a liver transplant. He was in excruciating pain, so his doctor in Washington State says, use medical marijuana. The parts of the pain is because these pain pills are killing your liver, and your liver's dying already. We got to get you off the pain pills, put you on medical marijuana, because that doesn't harm your liver. Mm-hmm. Well, the doctor who prescribed them or recommended the medical marijuana didn't recognize that the organ transplant center, when they detect there's marijuana in his system, kicks him off the organ transplant list and says, if you get clean for 6 months, we'll get you back on the list. He dies 2 weeks later.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Really?
A good friend of ours, Jim, I want to say Clar, I think it was one of the Jims. I forget which Jim is which, but lost his life here in Oregon, waiting for a liver transplant. A medical marijuana advocate who spent 9 years not using medical marijuana because he was waiting for the liver transplant he never got.
I mean, can't somebody with a soul, like a doctor with a soul, speak up and say something? I mean, I get it. There's going to be unforeseen situations that we end up getting into, and we don't realize how there's conflicting laws, right, in different areas. But can't somebody with a soul say something and stop this? I mean, that is ridiculous. Utterly, I can't even make a sentence now.
Well, Heather, I know so we're running upset. Up against the end of the show. I want to make sure I get a quote in for you that comes from one of Richard Nixon's advisors, Ehrlichman, who did time for the Watergate crimes. But it was revealed in an article last year that Ehrlichman had said to a reporter who had asked about the war on drugs, and Ehrlichman said, quote, "You want to know what this was really all about? The Nixon campaign in 1968. And the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to either be against the war or black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and the blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did." End quote.
Yeah. Everybody needs that to be the takeaway with this. Because there is no logic in the drug war. There is no logic in marijuana prohibition. There's none whatsoever.
My thanks to Heather Wade for having me on Midnight in the Desert. Check out the show archives at midnightinthedesert.com if you'd like to find a way to hear the entire four-hour program. That's all the time we have today. Time flies with the legalized. Thanks for sticking with me on a day where I'm kind of dragging, but we'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at Delta 9, thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it.